From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You may know my guest, Mahershala Ali, from, let's see, Crossing Over, or Predators, or The Place Beyond the Pines, or The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Or you may know him from Crossing Jordan, or House of Cards, or maybe a little label out of Oakland that I think has the best label logo of any logo
that
of all
an
time.
Extraordinary logo.
By the way, Dell told me that it's actually an Egyptian hieroglyph, that he found that out like 10
later.
Years after the fact. He didn't know that. He
That's
just was vibing
wild.
Into that.
Wow.
But if you really want to deep dish with my guest, Mahershala Ali, you should look at the year 2016, where he went from Free State of Jones to Kix, and culminating with Moonlight, an extraordinary group of performances that really marked him as one of the actors of our generation. His newest film as an actor is Green Book. My guest, Mahershala Ali, thank you so much for being here.
Elvis, thanks for having me.
Completely my pleasure. But that, because I met you for Moonlight, and I told you we had just shown Kix at Lackman, where I run the film program, and just those three performances, those three different guys. That really cemented for me something I've talked with you about briefly, that you tend to view characters in terms of their size.
Yeah.
Their figurative size, don't you?
In part. I try to look at it holistically, but I think one of the things I start with is I get into region and voice and speech, and then I just have to think of the character physically. So if it's even just like these, a minor adjustment of picking up 5 pounds or losing 5 pounds, or no push-ups now for the next several months, no working out, to working out, you know, to so that I feel like I feel my muscles, feel my body in a different way. Those are things that are really key for me to lean in on, and they give me clues into the psychology of the character. A few years back, more than a few now, but it was 2012, and I was going in for this little show that Netflix was going to do called House of Cards, and Fincher says
to me...
But
it was David Fincher, so that elevated it a little
right,
bit.
Right, you know. But David says to me, hey, man, if I'm going to believe you as a lobbyist, I think you got to slim down. You got to lose about, 10 pounds or whatever, because otherwise I'll be distracted. And I'd always kept that with me. I'd always sort of worked that way, but just to hear, to sort of like get that helpful directive.
What did he say to you about Benjamin Button? Because
Benjamin Button,
what did he say to you about that guy?
You know, he had seen me on, I feel like it, I kind of owe his daughter this, I think. I think his daughter was into this show called The 4400.
Which I love that show.
And it was a great show to work on, because there weren't a bunch of sci-fi dramas around at that time. There weren't really any.
And this was an epic sci-fi drama about time travel, also what that did to people psychologically.
Yes, and a lot of like really great characters on that show, and it was a strong show the first season. I think those shows are hard to, they're serials, and so they can kind of get out of control with the sci-fi elements in them, but
you're trying to back into the special effects and you're trying to do that stuff and create character on a TV show budget and schedule
and keep it human. I think that's the real challenge. But he had seen me on that show, and I was playing a gentleman who was from the 50s and it served in the Korean War, and then had disappeared and reappeared with everyone else in coming back. I think it was like 2006 or something like that. So he felt like there was a similar essence between that character and Tizzy, who's a gentleman around the turn of the century. So in terms of size, I'll tell you a funny story. I've never told this story before, but in terms of size, it was in a solid place. But we shot that movie for 2 years. So we started shooting that movie in, I think, September or October of 2006. The movie came out Christmas of 2008. We were finishing some LA, some little reshoots in like, I want to say September, October 2008. So I had started working on the film, and at that time I was maybe like 30, 31 or something like that when we started. And we're shooting the film, and then I go away And I'm off for like a month and a half or something like that. And I go away. I visited my mom who had moved to North Carolina. I visit my mom and hanging out and just comfortable. And I was an athlete. I could eat anything. And I always had this body that would metabolize that stuff. It wouldn't matter what I ate. And I looked like I just got out the gym. I just had some good genes, you know. But here it is now. I'm about 32, 33. And I left and I was gone for about a month and something, and they had just been working away, and I come back and I see, you know, one of the producers, Sion, David's partner, and she looks at me and she goes, "Marshall, everything okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, everything's great. Yeah, I'm good." And but the question felt a little loaded. And I remember I went to go get in my wardrobe and I went to put on my pants, and suddenly I couldn't get them. I couldn't buckle them. And I didn't realize it. It just snuck up on me. But I had picked up like 10, 12 pounds or something, like over a month. And I just couldn't fit my costume. It was so embarrassing. They had to cut the side of the pants and open them up and add a little piece. But the weird thing is that I age in that film. So it actually worked out where when I... But the stuff I was coming back for, I was older. And so I already had a waddle, which I may not have even needed at that point, a piece, you know, a special effects piece to give me a little weight on my neck. But yeah, so I looked, clearly I looked older and I looked different from how I started the journey. And it just sort of like worked out that way. So
it's a tribute. My guest who inadvertently aged himself for, yes, David Fincher, yes, Mahershala Ali, whose new film, Mahershala's new film's actor, is Green Book. But David, I know, is very specific about physicality. Yeah. And I think I would ask you, working with him really, and you just said it, changed the way you thought of yourself as a physical performer. Because I mentioned to you the last time I saw you is that I've always thought of you as being somebody who calculates a character physically.
Yes.
And part of that, I always feel like it's a matter of the way as African-American men, the way we inhabit the world.
Yes.
So we're aware of the size of our size in figurative terms more than anybody else is.
It's very true. It's very true. And it's something that has played a part just in my walk throughout my life. Like, you know, one of my closest friends is 6 inches shorter than me, a brother named Luke Mon. I don't know, maybe Luke is probably 5'8", 5'9", fairer skin. And when we talk, both grew up in the Bay Area, and when we talk about some of our experiences, I could tell he's having a slightly different experience than I am. And what I mean by that is there's something about being 6'2", being very dark skinned, and having carried that since I was a young boy. I haven't grown since I was 14. 13,
wow.
14.
You're that tall at that age.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not to say that depending on shade and size, like suddenly people who are not like dark and tall don't experience racism. I'm not trying to say that. What I am saying is that there is an image of what is more immediately threatening, and I fit into that image, and I've been experiencing the repercussions of that conditioning for most of my life. I've always been a really large kid, and so it definitely plays a part. But in terms of and something I'm very conscious of as far as the work itself and working with David. And something similar that happened with Vigo, I think with David, working with someone like that who was that specific, I have so many stories about David Fincher, but working with him, amazing stories, but working with him just gave me permission in my own mind to be myself. I was like, oh, I'm not crazy, because this guy is the most specific, meticulous person I've ever been around in my life. I was in House of Cards, we're about to start shooting, and I'm in my makeup trailer. I'm in my wardrobe trailer or whatever, and I'm getting dressed, and we haven't shot anything yet. I hear a knock on my door, and it's David, which is kind of strange, and I'm, whatever, 13th on the call sheet or something like literally. And so for him to come in the space and want to have a conversation, I'm like, what is this about? He's like, I just want to look at you. So he starts looking at me. And the suit has already been tailored and cut and everything. He literally starts calls in the wardrobe person and starts tearing the suit apart, like literally cutting open the shoulder pad and saying, this shoulder's a quarter of an inch too high. The button right here should be a fraction lower. Has them remove the button, the pants, because it should look like more of a Wall Street kind of like square suit. And so he starts breaking it down, going the makeup trailer. He starts making it.
He comes in the makeup glamorous trailer. And Taylor, because he hates stuff that looks like a movie.
Yeah. And I'd never had seen a director. It's like, you know, Pete, for instance, he's going to let Betsy just do her job. And,
Pete Fairley.
And that's no diss to Pete and no, like, whatever. It's just there's some directors who are like, okay, what do you do? You're the DP, you're the wardrobe, you're the makeup. All right, cool, do it and just make sure it doesn't distract me. And you show up on set when David can do everybody's job. It's just that
it would never get done.
Yeah.
But he'll still try to do the job anyway. Which is why it took you 2 years to make this movie.
Yes.
But it's so interesting because, again, when I said to you what I've always been struck by, and I mentioned these three performances from 2016 because these are three men who inhabited the world physically in very different ways.
Yeah.
And that's when it struck me how physical an actor you are and how much work and deliberation goes into those choices about where those guys are.
Yes.
And we go back to Free State Jones. Here's a guy who's really not aware of how he ends in the world until he runs into a white man in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
Which is actually my favorite scene in the movie, that scene when you guys come up. It's a timeless scene, actually.
Yeah. Thank you.
And then to go from that to Kicks, where this is somebody who demands to be seen.
Yes.
And there's not that distant from Juan in Moonlight, but there are calibrations to be made in physical terms too.
Yeah, there are tweaks. Like I've tried to make him from the Bay Area. Like I tried to put R's on it.
And then
physically, I felt like he had spent time in prison, so there needed to be this ownership of your body, this ownership of space, the spatial awareness.
And the way he got too close to people. I talked to you about this before. The way he understood how getting into somebody's physical space does something to them psychologically.
Yes. And he wasn't at all shy or apologetic about that. When Juan, I think he's somebody who there are other qualities that there's space to really embrace and incorporate in that character's being that only add to what Barry has set you up to do. You know, I think depending on what you're looking for and how you put characters together, you know, maybe another actor wouldn't see certain things, or maybe someone, there's some, like Brian Tyree Henry might bring something else, a totally different quality to it. But what I could see in there that there was really space for him to be a human on a deeper level that we're not accustomed to seeing in those type of stories and from characters who walk with that occupation, you know? And that's really all due to Barry and Terrell Alva McCraney, to being able, leaving space for those other qualities to have space to breathe, like his kindness, his consideration, his generosity. All those things are built into that script, and you just have to make sure that you don't step on those moments.
Of course, we're talking about Barry Jenkins and Moonlight, but God, we have so much to talk about. Clearly, we're going to take a break. My guest is, I'm sorry, I forgot to say this, Academy Award winner, Mahershala Ali.
Thank you.
His new film is Green Book. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. There's still plenty to talk about. My guest is Academy Award winner Mahershala Ali, one of the stars of Hieroglyph Imperium, but that's, again, another conversation.
Yes.
His new movie is Actors, Green Book. But we should talk a little bit about Green Book, too, because, again, we're talking about physicality and somebody who is aware of the regard that he gets when he walks into a room.
Yes.
Dr. Shirley is somebody who understands that.
Mm.
and understands his impact and his presence. But there again, if we talk about the contradictions in Juan, we can't not talk about those in Don Shirley, who is a guy who's both free and rigid and guarded at the same time.
Yes.
And that's all in the physicality, isn't
it? Yes, yes. You know, he's somebody who he had a point to prove. And I think he lived with the awareness of needing to prove that point, which I think was both about himself and about his people. I think that he was aware in a really heightened way that he was somebody that had extraordinary talent and somebody that had that definitely stood out. And I think he, look, for myself, going to school in, I remember going to school in New York City. I was in the acting program at Tisch, and I was there from 97 to 2000. And I would catch the train from Brooklyn and go into the city to go to school. And here it was, I was coming out from California. But in New York, I remember just coming into my own just as a young man and wanting to be respected. And part of that, and looking at women, say, turn their ring over on the train, or walking in where I was living in Park Slope in 97 in Brooklyn.
Which is just starting to get gentrified and seeing all those young white families there.
Yes, and seeing people like me walking back at whatever, 10:30, 11 at night coming from school on a fairly well-lit street, but see people cross the street or move in the subway car. Like, those are all things that I found myself always fighting back against, and how I would fight back against them were through how I moved, the choices I made as far as like what I put on, how I dressed, and not to necessarily make life easier for them, but to make life easier for me. Cause you're constantly like sending these messages. And so what I found, like, there was this battle, this conversation that I was always having between their discomfort causing my discomfort, you know, and also wanting to say that fight against who they were assuming that I was because of just being black, you know, and so making certain choices to say that I'm an individual, not to say that I'm not black, but to say that I'm an individual and I interpret myself in this way. And this is how I dress. This is how I choose to talk. This is how I carry myself, and always being very aware of how the world is looking at you. And so,
what you're saying is there's a kind of a physical performance aspect that you even brought to your life that informed you as an actor.
I think you have to. Like, I think so many, even without being conscious of it, I think that is true for so many people who are growing up in this country, and one that has many false perceptions of, or uninformed perceptions of black culture and of black people. And so, as a result, in growing up and in our parents telling us you gotta be twice as good to be considered equal, or like all these things that you're told from a really young age about pushing and striving towards some version of excellence in order for you just to have the peace that an average person would have, or the opportunities, or the well-being that someone who doesn't grow up within your skin and within those circumstances may have a different experience. And so for you to be able to have some version of fulfillment and to reach your potential, that in every aspect of your life, you have to strive towards excellence. And that can be interpreted in so many different ways for people, but that's, at least me growing up, those were the messages that I was receiving that were going to equip me with the tools that I needed to fight back against a perception that wasn't going to be one that served me. So how that marries with Don Shirley is that, as a gentleman, I think that was always acutely aware of his environment and who was in that environment and how those eyes laid on him. And so I think Don Shirley's way was to sort of be above it all.
It's the treatment. We're talking about perception with my guest Mahershala Ali. His new film as actor is Green Book. And I guess I'm glad we're talking about this in this way, because it's interesting. You found a way clearly to make this character a kind of a working autobiography for yourself. But what I mentioned to you in seeing the film is that I was struck at that posture. You're talking about being above it all.
Yeah.
And that's a dancer's posture.
Yes.
That's like that thing we hear about, the feeling like there's a string pulling your spine straight.
Yes.
And your shoulders go back in a certain way.
Yes.
I mean, it's not military at
no.
all. But, I mean, there's a floating kind of movement that he makes.
Yes.
But there's still this kind of rigidity. The freest place in his body are the wrists.
Yes.
When he's playing. I mean, yeah. you can spot it. And I told you, watching that control and watching your triceps and the shoulders and then watching the way your hands float from the wrists, all that kind of physical elaboration is remarkable stuff, Mahershala.
Well, thank you. Thank you. What I've found in all the opportunities that I've had, that if you have even a decent script, it should be able to direct you. And I think that if you look at the language, the things that come out of Don Shirley's mouth, that there is, it sort of dictates that you carry yourself a certain way. It tells
it?
You. I think so. I think his, how sharp he is in response to Tony, how things go over Tony's head. I think that for me, what that tells me, his rhythms, his choice of words, that for me, how I have to break a script down and looking at something where the person is not, in this case, Don Shirley's obviously a real person, and I had a little bit of tape to...
But a very limited amount of archival material.
Yeah, yeah, and I had a little bit of tape to sort of confirm that for me. But for me, how I look at it, how I was looking at it was, there's no way to do this and be slouching. That's the simplest way I could sort of put it. In that,
you just saw that on the page.
I could see that on him. I just felt like for someone to be eloquent in this fashion and to see him as well on screen and in the footage that I saw him in, I felt like the only way to do this is to like sit up straight until your back hurts and almost bow it back like a dancer, and to be that precise, the precision that he exhibited just on the keys, and you can hear it in his music, that all that is, this is somebody who is extraordinarily conscious, and so therefore he is going to be conscious when he's enunciating, he's going to be conscious of shaking someone's hand. Obviously, when playing, when sitting down, I think he's going to be very conscious and aware of where his coat falls, or like, what does he have lint on his pants, or like, there are just so many things that, at least for me, told me that this is somebody who is a perfectionist.
You know, this fast thing is, even in the back seat when Tony really can't see him most of the time, the posture is still there.
Yeah.
And which I thought, I mean, that would be the point where maybe he's got to know this guy,
right?
And he doesn't have to be that kind of physical paragon.
Yeah.
But he's still sitting up ramrod straight in the backseat of the car, isn't he?
I tell you, there were takes where I didn't feel like I was physically not in the right position. And so I would ask Pete, I'd say, hey, can we do that again? I just felt, vibrationally, I just felt that there was something off. And then, like, maybe you could look at a playback and just look and see, it's like, man, I'm not, the posture isn't right. I'm not open enough. I'm not up and open. My chest is not open enough. And as soon as I would make that adjustment, I feel like I would drop back in. Like, we had like maybe we had a little bit over a week off because it fell during the Christmas break while we were shooting. And coming back to it, I had to be on myself about that, because as soon as I made or wasn't conscious of his physicality, somehow took something for granted or something slipped and I lose it, the scene wasn't working for me. I felt it just was off. And as soon as I would make that adjustment, I found it.
When you find a character or when you play a character, one of the things I look for in what you're doing is the way these characters express boredom. And in the case of Don Shirley, he's got a fast-moving, easily bored mind. And he makes a show of his boredom because it's a way of trying to get other people to keep rhythm with him.
Right.
Whereas one, he's kind of almost always bored and looking for something to stimulate him. I mean, I just You got this smile on your face.
Like, no, I'm smiling because you are amazing to me. The things that you tend, I don't care what interview you're in, some of the things that you recognize and pull out are really genius. So I just no. I was just enjoying that.
Or if you say, what did you watch it? But I just wanted to ask you this because clearly you watch the way people express boredom. And clearly you are somebody who pays a lot of attention.
Yeah.
So you're finding a way to sort of play boredom. I find fascinating because it's a thing that you never ask to do in acting exercises.
Yeah.
And when people do it, they are almost acting boredom.
Right.
But that's, for me, kind of the truest compass point of these characters, that the boredom that each of them expresses is very different.
I almost look at it that way. What I would say, and it could be going beyond the moments that you're talking about, but I think that space between dialogue, and again, this might not be exactly what you're saying, but I think that space between dialogue is where your signature is as an actor, because it's not where the writing is. So it's how are you going to provide these interstitials between like one point and then there's a stop to this next point. And so there becomes this healthy pressure for you to stay in it and keep speaking through the dialogue of silence. And so someone can interpret that as like boredom or a moment that lacks in dialogue, or it's a little bit unclear as to what that moment is. But for you as an actor, there's this opportunity to sort of free fall and just be in the skin of that character and sort of get into the psychology of that character, because that's when people are just watching you and they're wondering what you're thinking or what you're going to do next or what you're not going to do next or how that thing that was just said is playing on your mind, or having no idea what's playing on your mind because it's the opening shot and you're just driving in a car and we're just looking at you. But what is that person feeling, thinking? How are they being? And I was literally emailed my old acting teacher, Ron Van Loo, about a week or two ago. And I was like, I think one of the blessings in being in this space and having this new experience as somebody who's been doing this since 93, I had never been a lead up until that point. And so what I found is that you get all the way to being a lead to be able to just be quiet, because you not only have more material and more scenes, but then now you actually have to work all the way up to this point just to be able to be silent. And people in the story, the camera's still on you. So now you got to learn how to like articulate yourself without having the dialogue, not because you're an insignificant character, but because that you're a character of great significance now. And so now people want to see you think or process. And that's where your signature is. That's the difference between myself playing a part and Sterling Brown playing a part, or Ryan Gosling for that matter, whoever else. And not saying one better than the other, but just that's where your signature is as an artist, is as an actor, is in the silences, not necessarily on the word or on the line.
You just said, use the word stop, which is a musical phrase.
Mm.
You didn't say pause, you said stop.
Mm.
And a stop is musical. And that's when you, I mean, that's almost a stage thing for you, isn't it?
It is. I think so. And the reason being it's a stage thing is there's no cutting away on stage. And so from my experience with theater, you never get to turn it off even when it's not on you. And for me, in film and TV, the same is true.
I'm sorry to say this. We are out of time. But you have to come back and do the show again, please.
Thank you, Elvis. Appreciate you, brother.
Oh, no, appreciate you. My guest is Mahershala Ali. You just heard about how to be quiet in the movies and still have people watching. His new film, of course, again, is Green Book. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Leo DeLagula. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake Bott, who's associate producer. Nobody's ever listening to me. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to KCRW.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.